The safe house was not a house so much as a room with a bed and a window that faced the wrong way. It occupied the top floor of a narrow building on Masarykova Ulus, two streets over from the checkpoint road, and had been chosen because no one lived there, and the landlord was a man who collected stamps and rarely looked out his window. Vera had paid the deposit in cash 3 days ago, leaving it under a coaster on the kitchen table of a flat on Jindryshka that had been empty since the summer. She had told no one the address except Luka's, and only because he needed it to bring the satchel. The satchel was not here. She had taken it out herself, carefully, in the dark, prying up the loose board beneath her bedroom floor with a butter knife, sliding her fingers into the cavity, withdrawing the leather case that Jiri had pressed into her hands with the force of a man handing over a child. Paper is heavier than lead. She had carried it in her coat, wrapped in newspaper, across the tram to Karlovy Vary, then transferred it to a rucksack at the station, then to a cloth bag at the junction, then to the rucksack again for the final leg to Cheb. The transfer chain was clean. She had checked it 3 times. Clean. The room smelled of dust and damp plaster, the kind of damp that rose from stone walls in November and settled into the corners like a second atmosphere. Vera stood in the doorway and let the door close behind her, the latch clicking with a sound that was too loud in the silence. She switched on the lamp, a small brass thing with a green shade that she had brought from the apartment, and the light fell across the room in a narrow cone, illuminating the bed with its thin mattress, and the chair with its splintered arm, and the single window that looked out over a brick wall and nothing beyond. She set the rucksack on the bed and unzipped it. The cloth bag was inside. She unwrapped it. The satchel lay there, brown leather worn soft at the edges, the strap frayed where it had rubbed against her shoulder for 3 days straight. She ran her hand along the surface, feeling the grain, the wear, the tiny scratches that mapped the journey. She opened the clasp. Inside, the pages were wrapped in oilcloth, secured with twine. She untied the knot, unfolded the cloth, and counted the pages by feel 23 sheets, each one a stack of typewritten pages, each one a life compressed into ink and carbon copy. She closed the satchel. She tied the cloth back up. She put it inside the rucksack and zipped it shut. She sat on the bed and waited. The clock on the wall ticked. It was an old thing, wound daily by whoever had last occupied the room, and it ticked with a lazy, uneven rhythm, as though it were counting in a language Vera didn't quite understand. She listened to it the way she used to listen to the printer below, the steady, mechanical breathing of a machine that kept working regardless of what happened above it. Except here, there was no printer. There was only the clock and the lamp, and the window that faced the wrong way, and the silence that grew thicker with each passing minute. She had planned for delays. She had planned for the tram to break down, for the train to be late, for the checkpoint to be sealed. She had not planned for the silence. It pressed against her eardrums like water, filling her skull until she felt submerged in a muffled, distorted world, 1 degree removed from reality. At 9:30, she heard footsteps in the corridor. They were slow at first, uncertain, the kind of steps a person takes when they are trying not to make noise and failing. Vera sat very still, her hand on the rucksack, her breath shallow. The footsteps stopped outside the door. She heard the rustle of fabric, the scrape of a shoe against the floor, the faintest sound of someone shifting their weight from one foot to the other. Then a knock. 3 short taps, irregular, not the confident rap of someone who knew they were expected. She stood, crossed the room, and opened the door. Lucas stood in the corridor, and the first thing she noticed was that he was wet. Not with rain. There had been no rain in Cheb for 2 days, but with something else, something that made his hair cling to his forehead in dark patches and his coat hang heavy on his shoulders. He smelled of diesel and cold air and something sharper, something metallic that she couldn't place until she recognized it as sweat, sour and urgent, the odor of a body that had been running and hadn't stopped. "You're late," she said. He didn't answer immediately. He stood in the doorway, his chest rising and falling in quick, shallow bursts, his eyes wide and unblinking, the way a hunted animal's eyes are wide and unblinking before it runs. His lips parted and closed and parted again, and when he finally spoke, his voice was a whisper, cracked at the edges like thin ice. "They know," he said. Vera felt something move through her body, a sensation she couldn't name, a current that started in her chest and radiated outward to her fingertips and her toes and the back of her neck. It was not fear. Fear had a shape, a direction, a target. This was formless, a pressure without a source, a vibration without a frequency. She held it in place with both hands and examined it. The way she examined a text she was about to translate, looking for the structure, the grammar, the hidden syntax that would reveal its meaning. "What knows?" she asked. Lucas stepped into the room. He moved like a man who expected the floor to give way beneath him, his feet tentative, his shoulders hunched, his arms held close to his body as though he were protecting something he hadn't yet decided whether to share. He closed the door behind him with a hand that trembled so badly he had to try twice. "The checkpoint," he said. "They changed the procedure. They're checking everyone, not just the papers they're searching. They're searching bags, coats, everything. They have dogs, Vera, German shepherds, trained for—" He stopped. His jaw worked. He swallowed. "They have dogs trained for contraband." Vera's hand tightened on the rucksack strap. The leather creaked beneath her fingers. "How many?" "I don't know, maybe 30, maybe 40. They've set up a secondary line everyone goes through twice. First the papers, then the search. I watched a man go through. He had a loaf of bread. They cut it open. They found nothing. They let him pass. But they made him wait for 20 minutes while they sniffed every inch of the crust." She listened. She absorbed the information the way she absorbed a foreign text, word by word, clause by clause, looking for the gaps, the silences, the things that were not said. Lucas was speaking fast, his sentences overlapping, his thoughts tumbling out of his mouth before he could organize them. This was not unusual for him. He was always like this, nervous, twitchy, speaking at the speed of his anxiety. But something was different tonight. The quality of his fear had shifted. It was no longer the nervous energy of a courier who had dodged patrols and bribed guards and navigated the maze of checkpoints with practiced precision. This was something else. This was the fear of a man who had already lost something and was trying to outrun the consequences. "Where is the other copy?" she asked. Lucas froze. His eyes widened further, if that was possible. His mouth opened and closed, and for a moment she thought he was going to deny it, to lie, to protect whatever secret he had been carrying alongside the satchel. But he didn't. He simply stood there, his body rigid, his breath caught in his throat, and the silence between them stretched like a wire pulled taut. "The other copy," she said again, slower this time, each word measured, each syllable placed deliberately on the table between them like a piece on a chessboard. "Where is it, Lucas?" He looked at the rucksack on the bed. He looked at the satchel he knew was inside. He looked at Vera, and in his eyes she saw something that made the formless pressure in her chest crystallize into a shape she could name. Guilt. Not the guilt of failure, the guilt of betrayal. "It's with me," he said. The word landed between them like a stone dropped into still water. Vera watched the ripples spread outward, felt the impact reverberate through the room, through the walls, through the floorboards and the ceiling and the brick wall beyond the window and the street and the checkpoint and the city and the country and the world. "Why?" she asked. The question was simple. It was honest. It was the same question she had asked herself 1,000 times in the last 3 days, in the tram and the train and the rucksack and the cloth bag and the satchel and the pages and the oilcloth and the twine and the leather and the frayed strap and the weight and the weight and the weight. Lucas didn't answer. He couldn't. His mouth opened, but no sound came out. He looked at the floor, then at the wall, then at the window, then at Vera, and in each direction he found something he could not sustain. His eyes were brown, and they were wide, and they were wet, and they were the eyes of a man who had made a choice and was now paying for it with the only currency he had left his honor. Vera felt the betrayal settle into her body, not as a shock but as a cold that spread slowly, methodically, the way frost spreads across a window pane in the early hours of winter. It started in her fingers, cold and numb, and moved up her arms, across her shoulders, into her chest, where it pooled like water in a basin, still and reflective and full of things she did not want to see. She thought of the letter she had written in the apartment, the one she would never send. "I am afraid of Lucas, whom I barely know, of his twitchy eyes and his rapid speech, and the way he looked at me the first time we met as though I were a package he had been instructed to deliver, and he was unsure whether I was fragile or explosive." She had written that 3 nights ago, sitting at the desk by the window, and she had meant it as a catalog of fears, a list of uncertainties to be filed away and examined later. She had not meant it as a prophecy. "How much?" she asked. The question surprised him. He blinked, his mouth parting in confusion as though he had expected a different question, one that would have given him something to work with, something he could negotiate against. But Vera was not negotiating. She was calculating. She was doing the arithmetic of betrayal, the terrible math of what a person sells themselves for and whether the price was worth the cost. "Stop," he said. It was the only answer she was going to get. Stop money. Stop promises. Stop threats. Stop of whatever commodity the ministry dealt in the currency of compromised men and willing informants and the slow erosion of people who had once believed in something and were now willing to trade it for a ticket west. She looked at him, really looked at him. He was 22 at most, younger than she had realized, his face still soft at the edges, his jaw not yet squared by years of responsibility, his hands still uncalloused from work that required them to grip rather than type. He was a boy who had been recruited by a network he barely understood and handed a responsibility he was not equipped to carry. And he had carried it. He had carried it across Prague and Karlovy Vary and Cheb, through checkpoints and patrols and the constant, grinding pressure of a city under occupation. And he had carried it well enough to get the satchel to where it needed to be. "You didn't think," she repeated. "You told them about the safe house," she said. It was not a question. It was a statement, delivered in the calm, even tone she used when she was correcting a mistranslation, precise, unemotional, certain of the facts. Lucas closed his eyes. He nodded, once, a small movement, almost imperceptible, the kind of nod a man gives when he is admitting something he has rehearsed 1,000 times in his head, but still cannot bear to say aloud. "When?" she asked. "2 days ago, at the junction. They stopped me, they showed me a photograph. Of you, they said." He stopped, his voice broke, he tried again. "They said they would let me pass if I told them where you were going. They said they wouldn't hurt you. They said they just wanted to talk." Vera felt the cold in her chest deepen. She felt it spread to her hands, her arms, her neck, her jaw, her teeth. She felt it in her throat, where it lodged like a stone, making it difficult to swallow, difficult to breathe, difficult to speak. "And you told them," she said. "I didn't mean to," he whispered. I didn't know it was." "You knew," she said. "You knew exactly what you were doing." He opened his eyes. They were red-rimmed, glassy, the eyes of a man who had been crying for hours and had run out of tears and was now crying without moisture, the dry, silent sobbing of someone who has exhausted every other option. "I'm sorry," he said. "I'm sorry, Vera. I'm so sorry. I didn't think." "You didn't think," she repeated. She turned away. She walked to the window and looked out at the brick wall and the darkness beyond it and the street she could not see. She listened to the clock ticking on the wall, its lazy, uneven rhythm, and thought about translation. How meaning shifts when it crosses a border. How a word in one language carries associations that do not survive the journey. How a promise made in good faith can become a betrayal. She thought of her mother lying to Colonel Hansel, of Alina's trembling hands belying her steady voice, of the genuine conviction that truth was whatever kept her child alive. She recalled Jiri pressing the satchel into her arms, the force of his grip, and the certainty of his gaze, the look in his eyes that pinned her as the sole vessel for his desperate request. Below, the printer's machine ground through its afternoon routine, oblivious that the world above was preparing to tear itself apart. Behind her, Lucas made a sound, a small, broken noise, like a child crying in the dark. She did not turn to look at him. She did not comfort him. She did not forgive him. She stood at the window and watched the darkness and felt the cold settle into her bones and made a decision that she would carry for the rest of her life, the way she carried the satchel quietly, carefully, without complaint, knowing that the weight was hers and hers alone. The clock ticked, the lamp burned, the room held its breath. 3 streets away, beneath the floorboards of an apartment lost in the fog, the satchel lay still in the dark.